Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a topic that is ridiculously common, often misunderstood, and notoriously painful.
Mm-hmm.
Plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm.
It's the single most frequent cause of heel pain. So if you've ever dealt with it, or if you're just curious about how this specific piece of human anatomy works and, you know, sometimes fails, you are in the right place.
Yeah, and our deep dive today is built around a really comprehensive stack of information. It's compiled from the foot education section of orthoeducation.com.
Right.
And this is a free, peer-reviewed patient education website, which is great because it gives us the clarity and the detail we really need to understand this condition.
So our mission is to give you the shortcut to expertise. We're going to unpack the exact mechanics of what's causing the pain, bust the biggest myths surrounding the diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at you. Heel spur. And then walk step by step through the precise non-operative treatment protocols that, frankly, have an incredibly high success rate, if you stick to them.
Let's start with the basics, then. A lot of people throw around the term PF, but what are we actually talking about when we say plantar fascia?
Right. What is it?
It's a thick, fibrous band of connective tissue. You can think of it like a shock absorber or a spring that runs along the sole of your foot. It connects your toes to your heel bone, which we call the calcaneus.
Okay, and when it's inflamed, that's the fasciitis part. But what's actually happening to this band of tissue to trigger all that pain? Is it just friction or something?
It's a bit more sophisticated than that. The root cause is repetitive loading. So every time you walk, every time you stand, tension is placed on that fascia.
Okay.
And over time, that repetitive stress causes micro tearing right where the fascia originates on the heel bone. It's not one sudden traumatic tear, but thousands of tiny ones.
So it's an overuse injury where the damage just accumulates silently until the body finally says, okay, that's enough.
Exactly. When the body detects that micro tearing, it initiates a healing response. And that involves inflammation. And that inflammatory process is what produces that searing pain. Understanding that this is fundamentally a tension and tear problem, not just, you know, a bruised heel, is absolutely critical.
And this leads us to the classic, almost universal presentation of PRI.
Yes.
This is the absolute signature symptom. We could call it the first step phenomenon.
Yes.
If you're trying to figure out if you have this, this is the aha moment.
It is the most telling symptom. Patients almost universally report that the pain is worst with the first few steps out of bed in the morning,
mm-hmm.
or after they've been sitting for any prolonged period, you know, getting up from lunch, stepping out of a car. We call that post-static dyskinesia.
So why that morning stiffness?
Mm-hmm.
What makes that first load of the day so incredibly painful?
Well, when you sleep, your foot naturally relaxes and it often points down a bit.
Mm.
This allows the fascia to shorten and rest overnight.
Okay.
But then when you take that first step in the morning, you suddenly load and stretch that recently shortened tissue. You're pulling on the area that has all those micro tears. It's a very painful, abrupt stretch.
And where specifically should you be looking for the pain? Because I think some people point to the very bottom center of their heel pad.
Right, and that's a good distinction. The pain is typically slightly in front of and to the inside. That's the plantar medial heel region of the fat part of the heel. That's the spot where the fascia anchors itself to the calcaneus.
And the good news, I guess, is that sharp initial pain does often improve after a bit of movement, right?
It does, but that doesn't mean it's gone. You kind of walk it off.
But it comes back.
It comes back, precisely. It tends to recur later in the day, especially after significant weight-bearing activities. Long walks, standing for long periods, things like that.
Okay, here's a key nuance. What if the pain is, say, a burning feeling?
Great question. If the pain you feel is described as burning or tingling, that is generally not typical of plantar fasciitis. That might suggest some nerve irritation, something like Baxter's neuritis.
Which is a whole different thing.
A completely separate diagnosis. It's an entrapment of a small nerve near the heel.
That's a fantastic distinction. Okay, so if we know the mechanism is overuse and tension, who's most likely to develop this? What are the key risk factors?
There are several. Increased body weight is a major one. It just increases the load on that spring-like tissue. Increasing age, particularly hitting middle age, is also common.
And lifestyle stuff.
Yeah, lifestyle factors, jobs that require, you know, significant excessive standing. Or, on the other hand, a recent, very sudden change or increase in activity level, like someone ramping up their running mileage way too quickly.
So either too much repetitive loading or a sudden shock to the system. But I think the most important factor, the biomechanical one, it relates to flexibility, doesn't it?
It does. Perhaps the most influential biomechanical factor is a stiff calf muscle, what physicians call an equinus contracture.
A stiff calf.
If that muscle is tight, it limits how much your ankle can move. And that forces increased tension and stress through the arch and, consequently, through the plantar fascia.
So addressing the calf is kind of addressing the root cause for a lot of people.
For many people, yes. Absolutely.
So if someone goes to a doctor, beyond just hearing the first step story, what does the actual clinical examination show?
The exam is usually very diagnostic. We look for localized tenderness. The doctor will press directly on that specific plantar medial heel region, and you'll report tenderness.
Right.
We also check for that stiff calf muscle, and we do that when the knee is held straight. Critically, if the doctor dorsiflexes your toes, pulls them up toward the shin, that stretches the fascia and almost always exacerbates the symptoms.
I see. Now, we often hear that people with flat feet are prone to PF. Is there truth to that? Does that mean high arched feet are safe?
Well, there is an association between flat feet and PF. A flatter arch can put increased stretch on the fascia. However, and sources are very clear on this, any foot type can develop this condition. It is not exclusive to flat-footed individuals. It's really about how much cumulative tension that particular fascia can handle.
Okay, so because it's so common, it's easy to just assume any heel pain is PF. But what are some other things that have to be ruled out?
That differential diagnosis is so important, especially if the symptoms just aren't getting better. Besides PF, you could be looking at overload, heel pain syndrome, maybe atrophy of the heel pad.
The nerve thing you mentioned.
Exactly, that Baxter's nerve entrapment, or even tarsal tunnel syndrome. And in more serious cases, you might have a calcaneal stress fracture, which is a small break in the heel bone itself.
So a lot to consider. Now, let's talk diagnosis. My understanding is that initially you don't really need a bunch of high-tech imaging. Why is that?
Because the history and the physical exam are just so reliable. Plantar fasciitis is typically diagnosed based almost entirely on those two things. Plain x-rays are not routinely needed for an initial presentation.
Which brings us to the elephant in the room, the spike in the foot, the infamous calcaneal heel spur.
Yes.
For decades, the spur was blamed for everything. We need to debunk this.
Absolutely. The heel spur paradox is maybe the most fascinating part of all this. If an x-ray is taken, we might see this bony projection on the bottom of the heel bone, that's the spur, and it is caused by the same fraction forces that are overloading the fascia.
So the spur is a symptom of the overloading, it's not the cause of the pain.
Precisely. The critical insight here is that the presence of a heel spur does not directly correlate with symptoms.
Right.
Think of it this way. Many, many people who have never had heel pain in their life have visible spurs on an x-ray. They are completely asymptomatic. And on the flip side, many patients with excruciating PF pain have no spur at all.
That is the key takeaway right there.
Yeah.
Blaming the pain on the bone spur, it just misdirects the treatment away from the soft tissue injury, the micro tearing, which is the real problem.
Exactly right. When surgeons address PF, they're targeting the fascia, not the spur. That piece of bone is often just left right where it is because removing it wouldn't solve the soft tissue tension problem.
So advanced imaging, like an MRI, is pretty much never needed at first.
Almost never. Not unless that initial treatment fails and you need to rule out something like a stress fracture.
Okay, let's pivot to the most encouraging news of the day. The sources emphasize this overwhelmingly high success rate of conservative, non-operative management. If 90% of patients get better this way, what's the core reason people feel like they're struggling with this forever?
The challenge isn't the treatment itself. The challenge is discipline, consistency, and time. This is not a quick fix.
Right.
You have to commit to a protocol for several months, often even when the initial pain is already getting a bit better. And that's where people fail. They stop the protocol too soon.
Let's nail down that protocol. So core treatment number one is calf stretching. Why the calf?
Well, we established that a stiff calf, that equinus contracture, is a primary mechanical driver. So to reduce the tension on the plantar fascia, you have to lengthen the muscle group that's pulling on it.
And the technique is really specific. You can't just stretch any old way, can you?
Correct. The stretch must be done with the knee held straight. That's how you effectively target the gastrocnemius muscle, the big upper muscle of the calf.
And if your knee is bent?
If your knee is bent, you're mostly stretching a different muscle called the soleus, which is important, but it's secondary. You have to stretch the gastrocnemius.
So what's the commitment level for this specific stretch? How much time?
The sources suggest this should be done daily over a 6 to 8 week period, and the total time commitment is just 3 minutes per day. You can split it into sets, for example, 6 sets of 30 seconds per side.
Why?
Consistency is the magic ingredient here. This specific stretch alone is credited with alleviating PF symptoms in almost 90% of patients.
That's phenomenal. Okay, now for core treatment number two, the plantar fascia specific stretch. This one is a little more hands-on, but it's crucial for that morning pain.
This is the critical morning maneuver. You sit down, cross the affected leg over the other one, and then use your hand to pull your toes back towards your shin dorsiflexion. That maximizes the stretch in the arch.
How do you know you're doing it right?
You should gently rub the arch with your other hand. If you've got the correct tension, the plantar fascia should feel firm, almost like a tightly pulled guitar string under your thumb.
Okay. And the timing?
Hold that stretch for 10 seconds, repeat it 10 times.
Now, for what might be the most important instruction in this entire deep dive, when must this be done?
It is absolutely critical that this is performed prior to the first step out of bed in the morning and before standing after any period of prolonged rest during the day.
So you're pre-stretching it.
You're pre-stretching the fascia. You're reducing the severity of that abrupt, painful load on the damaged tissue. This is what breaks the cycle of micro-tearing and pain.
And you mentioned this takes discipline, because the timeline isn't fast. What kind of patients are we talking about here?
You should expect to see measurable improvement, maybe a pain decrease of about 25 to 50% after about 6 weeks of consistent stretching. But full resolution is usually expected over 3 to 6 months. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
We have been talking about plantar fasciitis based on information from the foot education section of the free and peer-reviewed patient education website, OrthoEducation, at www.orthoeducation.com.
So on that note of long-term management, once the symptoms finally resolve after those, say, 3 to 6 months, can you just hang up your stretching shoes?
That's such a common pitfall, and it leads to recurrence. The sources stress that ongoing management is essential because these things treat the symptoms but don't necessarily change your underlying anatomy.
Right.
You should continue stretching maybe 3 to 4 times per week after resolution just to minimize the risk of it coming back. Maintenance is non-negotiable.
Let's talk about footwear and support. We hear so much advertising for expensive custom orthotics. Are they really necessary?
The sources are quite clear on this. No. Mm-hmm. Custom orthotics are generally not necessary for the vast majority of people with PF. A soft, prefabricated over-the-counter orthotic, one that just provides some accommodating arch support, is proven to be really helpful and much more cost-effective.
And what defines a good shoe for someone with PF? What should they look for?
You want to look for a shoe that features a stiff sole and a rocker bottom contour. You know, that slightly curved sole that helps the foot roll through the step without needing the fascia to do all the heavy lifting. Comfort plus that arch support is the goal.
Okay, moving beyond stretching and shoes, what about activity and lifestyle adjustments?
Activity modification is crucial, especially in the beginning. If you recently started some new high-impact activity running certain gym classes that increases heel loading, you have to temporarily stop, at least until the symptoms significantly improve.
Yeah.
Then you can restart gradually.
And of course, weight management. That gives you mechanical relief.
Absolutely. Every single pound of body weight significantly increases the force going through the plantar fascia. So if you're carrying significant extra weight, losing it is one of the most helpful things you can do.
For those really stubborn cases that seem to resist the core stretching protocol, what other targeted relief measures are there? Like, what about night splints?
Night splints are excellent for tackling that severe morning pain. They work by keeping your ankle at a neutral position, a right angle, while you sleep.
So it keeps the fascia from shortening overnight?
Exactly. Wearing it nightly for just 1 to 3 weeks can often effectively break that morning pain cycle, and it gives the fascia a chance to heal in a slightly lengthened state.
What role do medications or injections play in this?
A short course of anti-inflammatory medication, NSAIDs, can sometimes help reduce the pain as long as you don't have any contraindications like stomach ulcers. For the truly recalcitrant cases, we're talking those that have failed months of consistent stretching, local injections of corticosteroids or even PRP might be considered.
But these injections come with some serious drawbacks, right?
They do. They can be uncomfortable, they carry a slight risk of infection, and most importantly, they must be used along with the stretching protocols. An injection only targets the inflammation. It does not correct the underlying biomechanical problem of the stiff calf or that repetitive tension.
So without the stretching, the problem will just come right back.
It'll just return. Given that over 90% of patients respond to this conservative treatment, let's talk briefly about surgery. It really must be the absolute last resort. When do physicians even start considering it?
Surgery is absolutely not recommended unless a patient has failed a minimum of 6 to 9 months of appropriate and concerted non-operative treatment. We really can't stress that enough.
Why so much caution around surgical intervention?
Well, there are several compelling reasons. First, the high success of the non-operative treatment makes the risk-reward calculation pretty unfavorable. Second, recovery from foot surgery often takes much longer than people expect, and complications can and do happen.
And it might not even fix the root cause.
Exactly. Surgery often only addresses the symptom, like cutting the tight fascia, without correcting the biomechanical cause. So the underlying issue can persist.
For the very rare cases that do proceed, what are the primary surgical options?
One less invasive option is extracorporeal shockwave therapy. This uses high-energy pulses, often done under anesthesia, to create a controlled injury, which promotes a healing response and new blood supply. A risk here is that symptoms can gradually recur.
In the more traditional procedures, they involve physically altering the foot's structure.
Correct. A partial plantar fasciectomy involves removing the injured part of the fascia. While it can be effective, it carries the significant risk of increasing the chance of a full plantar fascia rupture.
Which would be catastrophic.
It can lead to a profound flat foot deformity and, you know, even worse, long-term symptoms. The alternative is something called a gastrocnemius recession, which surgically lengthens that stiff calf muscle.
Targeting the root cause.
Right. But it can result in noticeable residual calf weakness for 6 to 12 months, and there are only limited long-term studies on its overall effectiveness.
So what does this all mean for you? Plantar fasciitis is common, but it's not a mystery. It's a biomechanical problem of chronic tension leading to micro tearing. And the most powerful tool you have is knowledge and consistency. Knowing the specific technique and, more importantly, the critical timing of the stretching protocol, that's your roadmap to resolution.
And here's the final provocative thought we want to leave you with. Since this condition is caused by repetitive micro-tearing due to overwhelming tension, and we know it's highly responsive to consistent daily stretching, how essential is proactively addressing that biomechanical component, specifically that stiff calf muscle in, preventing nearly all future recurrences of heel pain? The best cure is perhaps consistent prevention.
We have just discussed plantar fasciitis, based on information from the free, easy-to-understand patient education website, OrthoEducation, available at www.orthoeducation.com. Please remember, this podcast is for general educational purposes only. If you're dealing with an injury or have concerns about your health, be sure to consult a trained healthcare professional.